And now it's time for your financial destination with Roger Hamilton, with strategies to enhance or improve your retirement income.
Hello, I'm Roger Hamilton, and welcome to the Financial Destination Show. Over the next 20 minutes, we'll go over some ideas, some strategies to help you improve your current investments and to enhance your retirement income. Well, one of the biggest and most popular economic trends happening right now is the selling of either rental property or properties, or your personal property, your home. And for those of us aged 60, 70, 80, the timing couldn't be better. You know, after decades of living in your home, and where the housing market in the past was relatively steady and stable, and sometimes stagnant, but currently prices, properties have surged, and selling rather quickly and for well above the listing prices. It's the same for rental properties. Perhaps one or more units you purchased back in the 90s, and after renovations and repairs and upkeep and tenants coming and going, and after all the sweat equity, wondering if perhaps it was all worth it, well, last year and this year, and most likely next year, it seems like you can name your selling price and someone will pay you even more. There's always opportunities for investors, from being in the markets to becoming a home or rental property owner, and none of it came easy, and it was never guaranteed. But those outstanding real estate profits you're getting now came from long-term planning, patience over panic, and your reward is now. And probably the biggest check you'll ever see, $250,000, $400,000, $700,000, and for some, over $1 million selling their homes. It's a huge amount of money. And now we have to make it last for the next 10, 20 years, a lifetime. So let's set up two examples or scenarios when selling property, lowering your taxes and increasing or extending the life of your retirement income. So let's begin with the sale of a rental property. We'll do that one first, because income on that would be have tax consequences on income property. Now, every case will be different, and in all cases, with taxes, please consult with a tax specialist for your own specific situation. But let's set up an average. In this case, a couple. We'll call Bob, he's age 74, and Marilyn, she's turning 70 later this summer. Nice to note those ages, because at least one of them is still under that magical investment age of 71. Their rental property here in Metro, say, has sold for $400,000. And they paid $100,000 for this property back in the 90s. Some 30 years later, here they are. And 2 years ago, thinking maybe they get into the rental business, hoping to get maybe $275,000, maybe $280,000. We'll list it for $299,000, see what happens. Well, recently they would have listed it for $350,000. And the quick bidding war ended at $400,000. Now, the original price was $100,000. They sold for $300,000, or sold for $400,000. So they have a $300,000 profit at first glance. And that profit would be a capital gain. But over the years, the adjusted cost of the rental unit would have increased with renovations, repairs. And this is where your accountant comes in to determine your adjusted cost. The higher the cost shown, the more write-downs or credits placed against the gain will lower your overall capital gains, thus reducing the capital gains tax. So while this couple may have indeed sold this rental for $400,000 that they paid $100,000 for 3 decades ago, their capital gains may not be the full $300,000. But whatever the capital gain is, only half of it is taxable. So for every $100,000 gain, 50%, $50,000 in this case, is not taxed. The other $50,000 would be at your tax margin. So for Bob and Marilyn, they might split the capital gains. Both of them might be at different income levels, thus different tax margins. All the more reason to see your accountant. But let's say they're at the same tax bracket, and we'll use a 30% tax margin. So $100,000 capital gain. $50,000 is taxable. At 30%, that's $15,000. That's the bill. So 30% of half, or it's basically 15% of all of it. In this case, $15,000 is the capital gains bill. They can split it, or maybe there's just one of them. And your accountant would have that set up. And if that $400,000 rental had a gain of $200,000, half of that is taxable, $100,000 at 30%, a $30,000 capital gains bill. Again, maybe split, or maybe there's just one of you. So from this $400,000 check that you just received, there's no other bills to be paid, such as the mortgage, your line of credit. We'll assume it's all paid off by now. There are three things you want to find out, and you check with your accountant first. Number one, what is the capital gains and thus the bill for each of you or just one of you? Number two, how much RSP contribution room would you need to place? How much RSP contribution would you need to place to lower or offset, possibly eliminate, that capital gains bill? And once you have that number, number three, again, how much RSP room do each of you have, or is it just the one of you? Now, the fourth question you'll know the answer to. You won't need an accountant. How old are you? 71 and under? Both of you? One or both? And if both of you are above 72, then you have no RSP option. You pay the capital gains bill, and it's still fairly tax efficient. So if the capital gains bill is $30,000 and your income tax bracket is 30%, $100,000 placed in an RSP would give you a $30,000 credit. It would offset the capital gains. I mean, why fork over or give up $30,000 of that $400,000 of your money right away? Keep it and invest it and defer the tax for later. Whether it's capital gains income now or employment income in the past, RSPs provide tax credits and tax-deferred growth and continued income and growth into your retirement as a RIF. Now, yeah, you'll pay tax on this extra $30,000 someday as the RSP converts to a RIF, but it's better to keep that $30,000 invested in your funds, not giving it away and giving it time to grow. You will pay tax, not on the growth, but only the income of what you gradually take out. Now, Marilyn, she's 70. She places her money in her own RSP. She has the age, for sure, and most likely she has the room. She gets her own tax deduction. The money's hers to invest and take out income later on. Now, Bob's 74, so he's too old to add to his own RSP, but Bob places his contributions in a spousal RSP because Marilyn has the age, and he most likely has the room as well. So Bob gets the tax deduction, and the investments and the income later are hers. So they both get tax deductions. Marilyn gets both the investments, her RSP and his spousal. Now, maybe her retirement income is set to be lower than his. Maybe Bob had a bigger RSP already. So what you're trying to achieve here is to reducing capital gains and trying to get a fairly even retirement income for both. They both could be identical, they could vary, but at least you're trying to close the gap. It could also depend if Marilyn had a significant pension coming her way in retirement. It's all tax planning, and your accountant could determine how much each one of you should place in an RSP to lower capital gains and keep retirement income much the same. Think of $90,000. More efficient to have two retirement incomes each, $45,000 each a year, combined for $90,000, and have a $90,000 household income with one of you making $65,000, the other making $25,000. The one paying $65,000 will pay a lot more out in taxes. So you try and even it up. Split income as best you can. More for the household, less tax. Now the spousal RSP. The money has to stay there for 3 years unless it's being converted to a RIF due to age. So if the younger person, Marilyn in this case, turning 70, and Bob placed a large portion into the spousal RSP. A year or two from now, Marilyn can begin normal RIF withdrawals. From the spousal, around 5.4%, withdraws from the spousal, no problem. Someone withdrawing huge amounts from the spousal, Bob thinking he's a higher income tax bracket earner, even in retirement, hey, I'll add a whole bunch of money into the spousal. I'll get a big tax reduction in taxes. And Marilyn, you can take the money out next year, assuming she's in a lower bracket, and you'll pay less tax. Bob's in for a surprise. CRA can charge that tax back on the higher earner. If amounts are withdrawn in the first 3 years of a spousal, other than the normal RIF withdrawals, which have to come out. So Marilyn can withdraw as she wants on her own RSP and her RIF. She can take the minimum on the spousal RIF, but after 3 years, she can withdraw from that as she pleases. In everyone's case, the more you take out, the more tax you pay. The more money you make, the more tax you pay. However, it's only the income in the funds in your RIF. If you made 10% this year and only withdrew 6%, Only the 6% is taxable. It makes your money last longer, less tax. More growth. And you won't get that kind of growth in a 1.00% GIC where your money's locked away. So that's the first step on rental properties. The gain. How much is the bill? How much RSP room do I have? And to offset that, how much do I need to keep my money growing and pay the lower taxes? All right, that's step one. Next step, step two, tax-free. And we'll talk about that right after this break.
Knowing which investments that outperform and that are suitable to your goals and needs can be overwhelming. Understanding the advantages of growth-segregated funds and or market-linked indexes might have over balanced mutual funds could benefit your investments now and for estate planning later on. Diversifying part of your portfolio in private equity funds could have a significant impact on your retirement income. On your Financial Destination show, we'll discuss these strategies and more to enhance your retirement income.
And we're back. Tax-free. Step two on selling rental properties, but step one in selling your home. So let's say Bob and Marilyn have sold their home, and we'll use this time $425,000. An extra $25,000. Because with every investment, with every client, first few things you want to know is your timeline of the money, when will you need it, and what is your current income? Are you maintaining sufficient income to cover your current cost of living? We'd all like more. Are you expecting any unexpected cost you think might come up? So you want to set aside cash every time. 5%, maybe 10% cash on hand. You don't need to spend it. It's just there. The markets are up, it's still there. If the markets are down, it's there. The markets are down like they were in the first quarter of this year, the last quarter of 2018, the COVID quarter from February to May of 2020, you have cash on hand. You can ride the storms out a bit. Whether the markets are up or down, you have sufficient income and cash on hand. Having a decent retirement income pension, perhaps, and you keep, let's say, $25,000 aside for what we call rainy days and Mondays. So now we still have $400,000 to invest. Tax-free investments. And repeat that word back to yourself, tax-free. There's no age limit. You can start when you're 18. You can start when you're 50. You can start when you're 75. There's no real withdrawal limit. You set your own limit. But whatever it grows to, you can expand the limits. What income you take out, no tax. You can replace. You can add more. You know, every time I hear that Tina Turner song, "You're Simply the Best," I'm thinking she's singing not about someone else. She's singing about the tax-free account. And not just savings, but tax-free growth. Tax-free retirement income. It is simply the best. We have it. The Americans don't. Most countries don't. We do. But you have to know how to simply know how to use it to make it the best. So this is your first tax-free. You haven't placed any before. It started back in 2009. There is a limit, a contribution limit you can start off with. There's no growth limit. The limit right now to put in, $81,500 initial deposit each. So $163,000 as a couple. And every year, come January or whenever, each one of you can add an additional $6,000 more, $12,000 as a couple. That'll probably go up next year due to inflation. So after you've completed your RSP capital gain contribution, or if both of you are over 71, or in this case it's your home, so there's no capital gains tax, you'll load up on the tax-free. And just like the Eagles, you take it to the limit more than one more time. This $81,500 each, $163 as a couple. You can start withdrawing whenever you choose. Same times, different amounts. This is your tax-free income, no tax. And you get extra credits by sometimes having a lower income level. There's less tax to pay on your own income. And maybe you receive certain government tax credits, survivor's pension or benefits, if there's just one of you, if your taxable income doesn't exceed a certain level. So you can withdraw income from your tax-free, and it has no bearing on that. I still get clients for the first few years keep asking, when do they get their tax slips, or how do I claim this tax-free money? Never. As a surviving spouse, you get to inherit both your deceased spouse, say his, tax-free money, and the room, so the household gets to keep the $163,000 room going forward. And the selling of your home should pay your new rental or housing cost for the rest of, well, to the end. So $400,000, you go get a new apartment. If you're buying another house, it's another story. So you get into your apartment, the apartment's $2,000 a month, $24,000 a year. There's no real other surprises or household expenses. Probably there's no more roofs or decks or things to do. So the rent's $24,000 a year. And your other pensions hopefully cover your living needs. And it's easier to live with two people than one. But unfortunately, as we age, one might drop off. But we'll go with two right now. Bob, 74. Again, Marilyn, about 70. And both hope to stick around for 15, 20 years, maybe more. But at $24,000 a year for 20 years, the rent's $480,000. So you want that $400,000 that you had to work with, it has to grow. Well, pretty simple math. $400,000 at a 6% yearly return is $24,000. If that's what you're taking out per year, well, the money never goes down. But it doesn't always quite work that evenly every year. Markets change. And as inflation rises, and as your age rises, you might want to take out more. There's no need to die rich with $400,000. There's also no need to live poor. By having it all locked in at a 2% or less rate, withdrawing at a rate of 6%, in 15 years, your money will just about be gone. If you invested poorly in some high-risk idea that was not in your best interest, but once again something your 50-year-old son Larry advised you on while watching infomercials one night, just a steady source of good quality, allocated growth, income, dividend, balance type investments. See your advisor on that. So if this $400,000, you're going to place $160,000, really $163,000, but use round math, $160,000 placed in tax-free. And from this $160,000, you both start to withdraw $12,000 each, $24,000 per year. And the rest, the $240,000 you place in a joint, non-registered investments, accounts, probably SEG funds. And each year, you replenish that $24,000 that you withdrew tax-free from the $240,000 tax-efficient pile. Plus, you get to add another $12,000 coming over as well. So you're taking out $24,000 a year tax-free and replenishing that tax-free with $36,000 from the tax-efficient investments. Thus, each year, reducing your taxes. Now, if this $240,000 makes a good return, let's say it makes 10% some year, it generates a $24,000 gain. Most of that gain will be capital gains, not income. So only half of it's taxable, $12,000, and again, your tax margin, just like your rental property was a few years back. If you're paying tax, well, it's making money. It's not tax-free, the money would be tax-efficient, just like the rental property gain. Nice to have it. If you do have it, you have to pay some tax, but you'll keep reducing that as years go by. If the funds go down, there could be a capital loss. You really don't want that, but you can write some of that off. And SEG or segregated funds, the taxes build annually, not at the end. Say 8 years later, when you're getting close to 80, the funds might have had a good return for 8 years like they have the past eight, and you don't want to be hit with a large capital gains bill then. That has scared some 80-year-old clients from moving their funds from elsewhere, even poor performing ones, for fear of a potential large capital gains bill. So by paying a smaller amount of tax each year and transferring portions to your tax-free, it keeps reducing your taxes as you age, adjusting your cost base. By having all these funds, RSP, RIF, tax-free, investment accounts, and SEG or segregated funds, the original $400,000 or whatever it might be you invested with, it's all life insured. So if something happens to one of you, the original balance is life insured and goes to the other person. If that $400,000 or whatever you have invested should fall in price and one of you stops breathing, the full amount is life insured and goes to the other person. And the value increases, you get that as well. And prior to age 77, you can lock it in different times, 1, 2, and 3 year segments. So it's all there. Life insured funds, not a big deal at age 50, the halfway point in life. It's a big deal at age 75, hitting into the final quarter. Tax-free growth, retirement income, and estate planning, all under one roof, proceeds from the roof that you just sold years ago. We thank you and for listening in this morning. We trust you learned something today, something you can use to help you enhance your investments and retirement income. This show will be on my website in a few weeks. You can visit yourfinancialdestination.ca. Call 902-499-5879. This is Roger Hamilton. Until next time, stay safe and stay invested.